Mr. Rizal. For the past 15 years, he has lashed out against racketeers and mobsters without regard for politics, position, or even his own personal safety. Now he is blind, the victim of a vicious acid-hurling attack. Through this series of broadcasts, Victor Rizal continues his fight as he examines the top news of the week to get the inside story on events that affect you and your family. Here, then, is Inside Story with Victor Rizal.
Good evening, Don. How are you?
Hi, Vic.
Good to see you.
Vic, your story, the Victor Rizal story, is still the big story this week. And could you sort of sum it up for us and wrap it up for us and tell us what has transpired?
Don, I don't think ever in the history of broadcasting, either over radio or TV, a newscaster has been put in a position where he's the central figure in the news story.
I can never remember it.
And I figure that the best thing to do it is to handle it as objectively as I can, despite the obvious emotional impact of hearing exactly 1 week ago that a combine, which the federal district attorney, or the assistant district attorney here, and Mr. Williams coming in from Tokyo, has said includes 8 or 10 people and goes across into several cities in a labor racketeering combine. Now, I'd like to say this. The FBI cracked this case, and I personally on the air want to say that's wonderful. I think that the facilities of federal government cracking down on this will eventually show a network across this United States which is cruel, which is absolutely without humanity, despite its urbanity and despite the fact that it walks around and looks like ordinary human beings on 2 feet. That's the emotional impact that can be understood. The other thing is that, to recap the story, the FBI now has a well-fixed case, just so that that word isn't misinterpreted. It has a case really nailed down. Or authorities such as J. Edgar Hoover, the Department of Justice, the federal DA, his assistant, would never be making the statements that they are. Now, they have picked up one man, and no sense in mentioning their names because they only confuse. This man was the basic contractor for the crime. They had a cutout so that he couldn't be identified by those who he went later. He took two others, and they went to a fellow who was killed for being in it, and that's Telvey. Telvey threw the acid, not knowing that he was throwing it at me, Victor Rizal. He learned it later, and then when he found out, he then asked, as I'm being informed just by people around and not by the authorities, for more money. Now, it's very significant that he came back and asked for $50,000 more, so he must have known that there was $50,000 available.
Yeah.
And you don't have $50,000 lying around and just routine cash boxes.
Now, have they gotten any closer to the top men that have directed this assault on you?
I know only what I read on the ticker, see in the newspapers, and hear around, not from official sources. And the latest story is, and this is again completely in the unofficial realm, the story that is being printed now and will be printed is that a high authoritative source has told one newsman, and that's not myself, that it's the Journal American in New York, that there are two people under surveillance, and I report it as the latest, most exciting news break. I have no way of proving it. One is allegedly a trucking union official with a long arrest record, and the other allegedly is a man high and active in garment and harness racing circles. Now, this obviously begins to interlock with one racket after another, and where it stops, only the FBI, which broke the Weinberg kidnapping case today, knows.
Certainly, the FBI, what they've said, and the United States Attorney Gilchrist, verifies what you've said from the beginning, Vic, and it certainly vindicates you in the thought that naturally it was from top racketeers, that it was bossed all the way through.
It was the underworld, and they have that, and I think the story will unfold.
Now, in the Democratic Party, the nomination of Kefauver, you have an interesting story behind the nomination of Senator Kefauver as vice president.
Yeah, this incidentally, I think, is a real iffy story. If Mr. Stevenson should win, and if Mr. Stevenson, as he himself has said, should not last out his term, then the President of the United States would be Senator Estes Kefauver of Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Now, he would not have been the Vice President had he not been stopped by one man, Alex Rose, the leader of the New York Liberal Party, from going home Thursday night. When Estes Kefauver in the Blackstone Hotel in Chicago, and this story hasn't been seen around, had heard that Stevenson had declared the Democratic Convention a wide-open convention, Estes Kefauver began to pack his bags to go home. He thought a deal had been made between Stevenson and the South and Humphrey to keep him from the vice presidential nomination. He was packing his bags and ready to go when at midnight Thursday he put in a telephone call was put in to Alex Rose in another hotel. Mr. Rose came across, told Mr. Kefauver to wait, went up to see Adlai Stevenson, explained to Mr. Stevenson that Mr. Kefauver felt that he had been deserted and that a deal had been made to cut him out. They called up, Mr. Kefauver came down, there was a celebration in Mr. Stevenson's apartment or suite, and Mr. Stevenson explained to Kefauver that it would be better for him, Kefauver, to stay in a wide open race, and that it was no effort to cut him out, because if a close decision had been made with Lyndon Johnson of Texas, Sam Rambler of Texas, Harry Truman, all of whom opposed him, then he never would have had a chance, and the man selected would have been Senator Humphrey of Minnesota. So Kefauver did not pack his bag. He did stay in town, and about 3:30 in the morning called the press conference, decided to run, and got the nomination. And so if elected, and Mr. Stevenson does not last out his term, a man who thought he would not even get the nomination and was about to leave will be President of the United States, and so the course of history would change one way or another.
Now, Vic, do you think it's significant and indicates in any way whatsoever that there's a revolt in the labor unions among the rank and filers and the heads of unions, when you see that Mr. McDonald, the head of the Steelworkers Union, who's been in the news so much this year, seconded the nomination of Mr. Stevenson. And then a steel worker from Providence, Rhode Island, a rank and filer from the union, seconded the nomination of President Eisenhower. Do you see anything coming about here in the unions?
Well, it's no revolt by the rank and file. What happened was this. It's a change in what the Republican Party is going to do. This steel worker is a furnace worker in Providence, Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. He's a rank and file worker and a rank and file Republican delegate. What happened was that the party higher-ups decided that they would like to get a working man, the rank and file, since they don't have the leadership of labor with them, to nominate the President of the United States for renomination, rather. Mm-hmm. And this was no mere gesture. It was decided by three of the most powerful men in the United States at a room Tuesday morning in the Mark Hopkins Hotel. There were Sherman Adams, Tom Dewey, Herbert Brownell, and for a few minutes, Bob Humphreys, who was the campaign director for the Republicans. They brought in a fellow. They had discovered him in a postcard poll of the delegates to the Republican convention. There were 60 labor people at the Republican convention. They brought him in. His name is Ed McCarthy. They talked to him. He wrote his own speech, and he seconded the president's nomination. Now, the important thing is that you have Sherman Adams, who really is the Assistant President of the United States and does run the White House, Tom Dewey and Herb Brownell, two of the top advisors to, three of course, of the top advisors to the president, taking this rank-and-file steelworker and putting him up there before television in an effort to go over the heads of the labor leaders and to make an appeal for labor votes.
This program was transcribed. Bert Parks and the Four Lads, live on Bandstand, weekdays on NBC Radio.